Connoisseurs of tempests in teapots will appreciate the battle that raged a while ago in the letters columns of the New York Times on the subject of Shakespeare's grammar. Linguist Jeffrey Nunberg thinks the whole debate tells more about us than about the bard.
The whole business began with a Times editorial that commended the alert TV listeners who had forced a donut company to re-record a commercial that used lay in place of lie. The piece closed with a clarion to language watchdogs to keep up the good fight. May your next campaign be aimed at that soap opera staple Between You and I. The editorial prompted a rejoinder from a reader in the Bronx who observed that Between You and I has been around somewhat longer than Knot's Landing. In fact, you can find it in The Merchant of Venice. This, in turn, drew a letter from a Manhattan reader accusing the first writer of bardolatry. He pointed out that Shakespeare was guilty not only of grammatical blunders, but of some spectacular errors of fact. In The Winter's Tale, for example, he refers to landlocked Bohemia as a country with a seacoast. If we're going to rewrite our grammar books to bring them in line with Shakespeare's usage, why don't we revise our atlases as well? At which point, a New Jersey reader wrote in to note that it's true that Shakespeare was guilty of anachronisms like putting clocks in Julius Caesar. But he was blameless on Bohemia, which did in fact extend as far as the Adriatic under King Przemysl Ottokar II in the 13th century. What a burden for a bard to bear. Shakespeare didn't know he was the father of modern English, no more than Hank Ballard knew he was the father of rock and roll. Shakespeare probably studied Latin grammar for several years. English schoolboys studied little else. But English was grist for the groundlings, and nobody bothered about getting it correct. There were no English spellers, no dictionaries, no grammar books. And if you slipped up on a who or a whom, nobody wrote a letter to the newspaper about it, since there were no newspapers either. People simply made do with the sense they were born with. Maybe that's why it was a golden age. It wasn't until the 18th century that English critics got around to establishing English as a proper language with rules and dictionaries. They treated Shakespeare with a mixture of awe and embarrassment, the way a newly respectable bourgeois looks back on the slightly disreputable ancestor who made the family fortune. A genius, to be sure, but perhaps a bit too coarse to be taken as a model. Joseph Addison made the point delicately when he called Shakespeare inimitable. People have been apologizing for Shakespeare's grammar ever since then. It's sort of silly, like making excuses for a turn-of-the-century pitcher for throwing spitballs before they made the pitch illegal. But our idea of Shakespeare has gotten itself all mixed up with a conception of culture that has very little to do with the plays. One sign of this is the way we expect to hear Shakespeare read. We insist on the modern British stage accent that's the official voice of high culture, particularly for Americans. Nicol Williamson got himself in trouble a couple of years ago by doing a Hamlet in a decidedly provincial accent. And I suspect that the critics will be listening closely to Mel Gibson's forthcoming movie Hamlet for any signs of an Australian drawl. We expect our Hamlets to sound like Gielgud or Olivier. So loving to my mother that he might not beteem the winds of heaven visit her face too roughly. Of course, Shakespeare himself would have found this pronunciation barbaric. He would have said the lines in what would sound to us like a cross between Newfoundland and Irish. So loving to my mother that he might not beteem the winds of heaven visit her fast too roughly. Now that's poetry. And it reminds us that Shakespeare's language has little to do with our notions of propriety. It was here first.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist associated with Stanford and the Institute for Research on Learning in Palo Alto, California. I'm Terry Gross.